desire peace. You alone will restore your kingdom to the burden, bring relief. You alone are true love revealed. It's by your blood that all hope is sealed. You alone will restore your kingdom. Let your glory shine all over. By your blood that all hope is sealed. You alone will restore your kingdom. Let your glory shine all over the earth. Let us join. Sorrowed and the broken by your miracle rise, rebirth. You, O Lord, are the love that heals. It's by your blood that all wounds are sealed. You alone will restore your kingdom. Let your glory shine all over. Love to wield. It's by your blood that our mission is sealed. You alone will restore your kingdom. Let your glory shine all over the earth. You, O Lord, give us love to wield. It's by your blood that our mission is sealed. You alone will restore your kingdom. Let your glory.
Hello, Glenwood, and welcome to this Sunday message on the abundant provision of Jesus from John chapter 2. Today marks 28 days since our stay-home order for Washington State began. Can you believe that? Our lives have changed so quickly. One of the new realities that my wife and I have been trying to get good at is becoming more resourceful with our food. Just before the stay-home order began, my wife went to the store. And once it started, we thought, let's see how long we can go before needing to go to the store again. We made it just over 2 weeks. And you can probably imagine, if you looked in our refrigerator, the shelves were empty. Our pantry was nearly bare. My wife ended up ordering groceries online from a store, but the store didn't have everything we needed. So we decided that I would go to Winco and try to get the extra things that we needed. When I got there one afternoon, what I saw was a line snaking its way from the entrance all the way around the building. My heart sank because I hadn't given myself enough time to stand in a line that long. And even more than that, when I saw the line, it reminded me of a time I'd been to Winco before the stay-home order, and it seemed like half the shelves in Winco were bare. I wondered that even if I could stay, if Winco would have the things that we needed. Well, the next morning, I tried again. I came early, and when I got there, I found no line, and even better than that, the store was full of food. Never in my life have I felt so excited to see a full rack of potato chips. They had just been stocked. When I got inside and turned the corner, I could see the produce, and they had strawberries and bananas and oranges. I was so excited. I actually got my cell phone out and called my wife to tell her the good news. Winco has lots of food. I thought for sure they'll have the things that we needed. I think we're all probably making some strange memories during this time, aren't we? In John chapter 2, there's a story of a wedding celebration. And it's a celebration that's going well until they run out of something important. they run out of wine. Like every celebration, the plan is for things to go great, but things go wrong. The shortage of wine wasn't due to the coronavirus. It was likely due to a groom's poor planning. And it wasn't something that could be easily fixed with a quick trip to Winco. In John chapter 2, verses 1 through 3, we find that Jesus, his disciples, and his mother were in attendance at the wedding. John 2, verse 1 says, "On the third day there was a wedding in Cana of Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. And both Jesus and his disciples were invited to the wedding. When the wine ran out, the mother of Jesus said to him, 'They have no wine.'" You can imagine the social awkwardness of the situation. You have this feast, you have this celebration that you invite your friends and family to, and you run out of drinks for your guests. Weddings in Jesus' day were different than the way that we do them today. It wasn't just a one-day celebration. It was something that could last a week long. It was a community event, and it was funded by the groom. And this would have been terribly awkward and even shameful to run out of wine to serve their guests. In the Old Testament, we find that wine was a symbol of God's blessing on his people for obedience to the covenant that he made with them through Moses. In Deuteronomy 7:13, we find out that in response to the people's obedience, God says he would bless them with progeny, with children, with livestock, with an abundance of food. And he says, with new wine and oil. In Psalm 104, verse 15, it says that wine is a gift from the Lord, and it makes men's hearts glad. After Israel faltered and fell away from the Lord when they rebelled against his covenant, Israel's prophets anticipated a day when God's blessing would return. The prophet Jeremiah saw that day, and this is how he described it in Jeremiah 31, verse 12. "They will come and shout for joy on the height of Zion, the city of God, and they will be radiant over the bounty of the Lord, over the grain and the new wine and the oil, over the young of the flock and the herd. And their life will be like a watered garden, and they will never languish again." When we get to John 2 in the story of the Bible, Israel is no longer in exile. They're experiencing some blessing from the Lord, but it's not his full blessing. Even though they're out of exile, they're still being ruled by a foreign nation. They're ruled by Rome. And even though they're out of exile, their spiritual leaders, we discover in the Gospel of John, they were just a sham. They had a little blessing, but they needed God's help. They needed him to do for them what they could not do for themselves, to be obedient to the covenant, to live out God's intent for them. And in a much smaller way, that's similar to what's going on here in John chapter 2 with this wedding. There was a little blessing. They had some wine, but it ran out because the groom failed and he needed help. Jesus' mother was at this wedding and she was all over this. If this was a wedding for a close relative or a friend, she may have even been helping behind the scenes. She knows that she can rely on her oldest son to help in this time of need. And so she goes to Jesus in verse 3. In verse 4, we find Jesus' response, and it is a little jolting at first. Verse 4 says, "And Jesus said to her, 'Woman, what does that have to do with us? My hour has not yet come.'" That is an interesting response, to be sure. Well, speaking to your mother in this way, calling your mother woman in English, feels condescending or rude. There is no disrespect with this word in Greek. In fact, it's the same word Jesus uses to address his mother when he calls out to her while hanging on the cross in John chapter 19. The next thing that he says is a little strange as well. He says, "What does that have to do with us?" This Greek idiom was meant to create space between two people. Jesus is pushing back on his mother's expectation that he intervene and do something. Right? And this is a common expectation between a mother and her son. Right? This is something that's natural. It makes sense. Jesus is pushing back, though, because his loyalties transcended his earthly family. Ultimately, Jesus was loyal to his heavenly Father. He was loyal to the mission that the Father entrusted to him. How hard this must have been for Mary. She had given birth to Jesus. She raised Jesus. She worked hard and sacrificed for him. Even though Jesus creates this space between himself and his mother, we should not mistakenly assume that this indicates a lack of love for her. Quite the contrary. Jesus loved his mother, and his commitment to do the Father's will was because the Father's plan was to bring forgiveness and resurrection life to all those who would put their faith in Jesus, including his mother. And that's the reason that Jesus gives at the end of his response, "My hour has not yet come." This was someone else's wedding celebration. This was someone else's failure, the groom's. Jesus' hour of celebration, Jesus' hour of provision for the failure of others, that hour was still to come. Mary is persistent. And we see in verse 5 how she responds to Jesus' words. His mother said to the servants, "Whatever he says to you, do it." Despite his reticence and his cryptic words, Mary trusts her son. And in this story, we find out why. Verses 6, 7, and 8. Now there were 6 stone water pots set there for the Jewish custom of purification, containing 20 or 30 gallons each. Jesus said to them, "Fill the water pots with water." So they filled them up to the brim, and he said to them, "Draw some out now and take it to the head waiter." So they took it to him. Jesus spots these 6 stone water pots, these large jars. They were probably something of a makeshift wash station for this wedding. Unlike today, the emphasis, the reason wasn't to kill germs. It was really about ceremonial purification. It was about following the law that God had given his people through Moses. This was the same law that revealed their brokenness and their need for a Savior. After Jesus tells the servants to fill these jars up to the brim, he instructs them to take some of their contents to the head waiter, the person who was running the banquet. Have you ever had an experience where you take something and you put it to your lips and on the first sip, it totally exceeds your expectations? I recently was making coffee early in the morning using a Keurig coffee maker, and before me I had 2 options. It was decaf something and a McDonald's blend. So reluctantly, I put the McDonald's blend in the Keurig and made it, and then with resignation, I brought it to my lips. And to my utter surprise, it was good. I mean, it was really good. It was so good, in fact, after I finished the first cup, I made another cup. Not because I needed more coffee, but because I thought maybe this was a fluke. I couldn't see how this McDonald's blend Keurig coffee could be that good. But it was. Now, I realize telling this story probably means any membership in a coffee snob society is being revoked, but trust me, you should try it for yourself. In John chapter 2, when the head waiter receives this dishwater and puts it to his lips, he is utterly amazed. He is surprised because it is good. Verses 9 and 10. When the head waiter tasted the water which had become wine and did not know where it came from, but the servants who had drawn the water knew, the head waiter called the bridegroom and said to him, "Every man serves the good wine first, and when the people have drunk freely, then he serves the poorer wine. But you have kept the good wine until now." Did you see how that worked? He doesn't know where this wine came from, but he knows that what he has in his hand is good. And so he calls over the bridegroom, the failed groom, and he gives him the credit. He says, everybody rolls out the best stuff at the beginning of the feast, right? And then the other stuff comes later. But you have reserved the good wine for now. Jesus provides for this groom's failure with abundance. In verse 11, John tips us off that there is more going on in this story than meets the eye. He says, this beginning of his signs Jesus did in Cana of Galilee and manifested his glory, and his disciples believed in him. In the Gospel of John, he records a number of signs that Jesus did. And these signs were more than just displays of power and miracles. They pointed people to who Jesus was and what he came to do. There was a significance to them. We saw this back in March when we looked at John chapter 6 and the feeding of the 5,000. It wasn't just about feeding this large group lunch. It was about teaching them that Jesus is the bread of life. And even more than verse 11, we actually see that John tips us off to the significance of this miracle back in verse 1. He starts this account by saying, on the third day. Now, this is marking the time between Jesus' interaction with Nathanael at the end of chapter 1 and this event. But as we know well from our recent celebration of Good Friday and Easter, on the third day would become a special day of power and provision. And perhaps John wants us to see that. He includes this detail to get us ready to see the significance of this miracle, where Jesus would provide abundantly. Beyond that, too, if we go back in John chapter 1 in verse 19, right after the prologue that began with these echoes of creation week, in the beginning was the Word, in verse 19, at the end of the prologue, John begins to narrate a sequence of events that take place over the course of days. And if you add those days together, this day of the wedding is the seventh day John tells us about in his gospel. The abundant provision of Jesus would provide true rest for the people of God. Like we heard and celebrated last week, Jesus brings life. He brings forgiveness and he brings the resurrection life of God to all those who would believe in him. This wedding miracle was more than just a kind deed done for a careless groom. Jesus was teaching his disciples. He's teaching us who he is and what he came to do. What does this story have to do with us today? How would Jesus have us respond to this wedding miracle 2,000 years later? Well, there are two lessons from this narrative that will bring us true joy and strength, even as we face uncertainty, failure, and brokenness. Brokenness inside of us and brokenness all around us. The first lesson is simple. It's not the main point of the miracle, but we can't miss it. When we face trouble ahead, losing a job, sickness, increasing tension at home, loneliness, or just anxiety about a very unknown future, when the realities of our broken world come crashing in on us, we need to do what Mary did. We need to go to Jesus for help. I'm pretty sure all of us have come into some extra time lately. Maybe that's because of changes at work or your social life coming to a screeching halt. There are so many ways we can waste that time. We can waste it away on boredom and worry. We can waste it on mindless things. Jesus knows what you're going through right now. Go to him. He wants to help. He's ready to help. Seek him out like Mary did. Now, this isn't to say that Jesus will always give us whatever we ask for. We actually saw this dynamic in the text. Not even Jesus' own mother could commandeer his power for her purposes, right? She raised him. She loved him. She sacrificed for him. The fact that Jesus' loyalty was with the Father and his mission, that was a good thing, though, because Jesus came to do far more than save this groom from embarrassment on his wedding day. When we go to Jesus for help, we can rest in the knowledge that he loves us and he wants what's best for us. Sometimes when Jesus says no, it becomes clear to us why. Maybe time reveals the immaturity of our request, or eventually we see how God was working in a way that we did not expect. But other times, we struggle to understand why. And maybe you're in one of those times right now. Even in those times, we can rest in the knowledge that he loves us, and that even if he won't take the trial away, he can give us the strength to stand. Whatever trouble you're facing today, don't face it alone. Take it to Jesus. Go to him. Ask for help. The second lesson that we find in these verses is really what the miracle of John 2 is all about. Jesus brings abundance. He brings life. That's what's going on here. Jesus brings abundant life. And that life produces fullness and joy and peace. And he offers it to us. Jesus provides for the failure of this groom, but even bigger than that, Jesus would provide for the failure of Israel, the brokenness of all humanity, by providing his life, his forgiveness on the cross and the resurrection life of God. In the story, Jesus' hour of provision, the hour in which he would give his life as a sacrifice for us, it was still in the future. But Jesus decided to give Mary, to give his disciples, to give these servants a sneak peek at what was to come, at the provision, at the abundance of God, the good and abundant new wine of the new covenant. Jesus said to his disciples in John 15, "Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends." That's what Jesus did for his disciples. That's what he did for us. He laid down his life for us. He was brutally executed on a cross. Jesus was the only person to ever truly live out God's intent for us. Where Israel failed, where humanity failed, Jesus overcame. Where we trusted ourselves, Jesus trusted his Father. Where we have rebelled against the Father, Jesus submitted. The perfect Son of God died the death that we deserve. He was executed on a cross. But in his death, we have been offered forgiveness. We have been offered standing before God. And the promise of eternal life, the ultimate feast, the ultimate celebration. And that life starts now. Jesus offers that life to all those who would put their faith in him. What an amazing example of that life we heard about last week from John 21 with the commissioning of Peter. If you remember, Peter, in Jesus' greatest hour of need, he denied him 3 times. And in John 21, on the beach, Jesus restores and commissions him. He invites him to affirm his love for him 3 times. The life of God can turn a failed coward into a faithful shepherd. The miracle at Cana, all that wine, it was an amazing gift, but it does not compare with the gift that Jesus would ultimately give. He gave his life so that we might have forgiveness. He was raised to life so that we might share in that resurrection life. All that wine at Cana, it was incredible, but it does not compare with the abundance that Jesus provides in the new covenant, an abundance that he offers freely to each one of us. As we face trials and disappointment, we can go to Jesus and find that life. When we face brokenness in our lives, when we find out about a diagnosis that breaks our heart, or we're in the middle of a relationship that's falling apart, Jesus offers us his abundant life. He can help us to grow. He can transform us in the midst of trials. He can help us as we face a broken world all around us. The wine was an incredible gift, but it doesn't compare with what God has done for us in Jesus Christ. He gives us forgiveness and new life. And today, no matter what trials you are facing, Jesus is inviting us to go to him. And may we find in his abundant provision joy and strength.
Of Zion, we will sing with our hearts restored. He has done great things, we will say together. We will feast and weep no more. We will not be burned by the fire. Not consumed by the flood, upheld, protected, gathered up. We will feast in the house of Zion. We will sing with our hearts restored. He has done great things, we will say. Dark of night before the dawn, my soul be not afraid, for the promised morning, oh how long. O God of Jacob, be my strength. We've broken and betrayed. You are the faithful one, and from the garden.